I'm Ed Adams, and you're listening to the AFCA Podcast. Hey, everybody, and welcome to the AFCA Podcast. And in this episode, we salute the amazing television contributions of President and CEO of Hallmark Media, Wanya Lucas. Now, I'll share more on this AFCA Special Achievement honoree after the break. The AFCA Podcast is sponsored by Morgan Stanley Global Sports and Entertainment. Every year, AFCA acknowledges members of the film and television industry during our annual Special Achievement Award luncheon. Four honorees are chosen by a committee and selected on the basis of their achievements throughout the course of their career. Now, they represent the individuals both behind and in front of the camera, including executives, journalists, actors, craft artists, and filmmakers. Now, President and CEO of Hallmark Media, Wanya Lucas, will receive the TV Vanguard Award this year for her vision and leadership in guiding the influential media brand into the future. Wanya has quite a few credits to her name that started at Turner Broadcasting, which is now Warner Media, where, as Senior Vice President of Strategic Marketing, she led brand strategies, marketing, on-air creative, and research across all digital media and CNN networks. Since then, Wanya has been in leadership at several networks, including Executive Vice President and General Manager at The Weather Channel, COO at Discovery Channel and Science Channel, President and CEO at TV One, and President and CEO of WABE Public Broadcasting in Atlanta. Wanya was named President and CEO of Hallmark Media in 2020, where she is focusing on diversifying the cast and storylines of Hallmark's content while staying true to its media brand. Now, I was able to speak to Wanya Lucas via Zoom recently about her career, her path to the top, and some of the life lessons she's learned along the way.
Wanya Lucas, thank you so much for being a part of the AFCA Podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here, Ed.
I have a quick icebreaker, which is, what was your favorite TV show growing up?
Well, this will date me a bit. I had a lot of favorites, but the first one that I recall that really had an impact on me was Julia. And that was Diane Carroll. She was the most beautiful woman I'd ever seen. And she was so elegant and smart. And I loved her little nursing outfit. It was always so neat. I loved her strength and her sort of having a place in the world, in this doctor's office where she was respected and she was kind, but she was tough. I wouldn't have used this term, but she was to me like probably the perfect woman. And the reason I say that is because she had depth and she had a lot of the qualities I didn't know how to articulate, but I certainly aspired to have and to be. She was the type of woman I aspired to be. I was very just entranced by her. And that's the first one. But I also watched a lot of sports, of course, like the wild world of sports. I watched documentaries. I watched a lot of news, too. I mean, I watched all kinds of content. I watched Dark Shadows and soap operas.
You really kind of, first off, you went through the gamut, which I love. Like, there's such a dearth of topics that you just kind of mentioned that you kind of grew up around. So that kind of brings me to my next question. Now, you know, you went to Georgia Tech, but you have a degree in industrial system engineering. And I was just kind of curious, like, how did you decide to take this journey from something that is so structured? And I can kind of see how systems engineering can kind of play into the human aspects of things and management. But really, like, how did you get from there to here?
Yeah. I it was not a direct line. I mean, I practiced for like probably 5 years. When I went back to business school, that's when I realized I joined the entertainment club, and I went to a high school performing arts, the Northside School of the Arts, growing up. So I was in the Follies at Wharton. So I was around a lot of people who wanted to be in entertainment, and I didn't even know that was a career. So it was really through business school. I realized that I could actually work in a business that I loved. And I had a couple of offers, but I had one in brand management coming out and one in entertainment. It was like a rotational program. And the brand management people at Clorox said, come learn basic brand management, marketing skills. You can use it later if you want to go into entertainment, but you can never learn these type of skills if you start there. You can't come back to this place. So that's why I decided to go into marketing at a packaged goods company. And then I went to Coca-Cola. The way I use I'm certainly not an engineer today, but the way I think is a little different. And I've learned to transmit this to people often. And industrial engineers are into continuous improvement, right? They are looking for ways to improve processes. They're looking for ways to improve results. And so that's kind of how my mind works. And I have to tell people that because we may be in this place and it's a good place, but I'm always trying to figure out how do we get a little bit better and a little bit better? What can we improve? So that's how I use my engineering mind. It drives some people crazy. I know that's why I telegraph, but but it's just absolutely who I am.
That is awesome. Thank you for sharing that. So before we go too deep in this, can you kind of describe the responsibilities of your job as president and CEO?
Sure. So I look at my job in a number of ways. The first thing I would say is I consider myself to be the chief brand steward. I have been fortunate enough to really work on great brands in television and media. And so as a president and CEO, really understanding the landscape, understanding our audience, what is our unique brand proposition? What is our true reason for being? This is all Clorox stuff, by the way, reason for being. And then how do we bring that to life? And that's what most people focus on. How we bring it to life, obviously, is movies. But I sort of think of myself and my role as really being wrapping my arms around those things strategically first. I also consider myself, this gets into the whole baseball thing, growing up in a baseball family. I consider myself a coach and a general manager, right? Making sure I have the best players possible and the best positions. And I have what I call my dream team. I have certainly achieved that here. And I think I've achieved that everywhere I've worked. But also knowing when to be a coach and knowing when to be a cheerleader. I was a cheerleader in high school, knowing when to be a coach, knowing to be a cheerleader. And at the end of the day, it's about the bottom line, right? I can do all those things, but if we don't achieve the business results that we need to achieve, then it's all for naught. So making sure that we are achieving, growing our audience as best we can, understanding them, but also making sure we're in touch with them and in tune with them, but delivering, strong financial results is what I'm ultimately accountable for as well.
That's amazing, by the way, first. So let's talk about, you do have a lot of brands underneath your umbrella, like Crown Media. So if you look at the brands like Hallmark Movies and Mysteries, Hallmark Channel, and Hallmark Drama, they have very specific focuses. However, I think as an umbrella brand, you have some idea of how you want things to work. And so my question to you is, like, what are the main ingredients that you feel that make successful television?
A lot of ingredients for different types of television. And I've worked on everything from news, weather/news. I worked on wrestling, which was fun. I've worked on documentaries or nonfiction as well. I think in terms of what we do at Hallmark our ingredients, I would describe as such. I think first, whether you're at Hallmark Movies and Mysteries, or even if you're on Hallmark Drama or the Hallmark Channel, usually there's a strong female protagonist, right? You've got this amazing female lead. And usually, certainly on the Hallmark Channel, there's a love interest. And I'm going to talk about what that means, because one of the things we've done is expand the definition of love. It's not always romantic love. Sometimes it's love for community or love for family or love of sisters, right? So, but there's some love element there. I also think when I think about the settings in our movies, it feels like home. And sometimes, unfortunately, home could be an office or home could be an olive, you know, grove. It could be, or it could be this cozy. It could be, you know, where you make chocolates for your community. I mean, it could be a lot of different places, but you have this sense of home. And that's created a lot on our sets. And then finally, I think it is about a journey. And I think journey is the through line between all the different networks. The journey on Hallmark Channel usually involves some type of love. There is always, the other thing that's consistent across all the networks, you know that there's going to be a comforting end at, you know, there's going to be a comforting end. Like there's going to be, everything's going to work out okay. Everything's going to turn out well, right? There's no sense of fear in what we do. I launched ID. There's a lot of fear in ID. It's a different kind of journey. I think though, Hallmark movies and mysteries to me is more about, I mean, it is about the love of solving the puzzle, right? And in our movies are a little more what we call evolved. The movies aren't necessarily about romantic love all the time. It is more representative of the other types of love that I talked about. It is a place too where we take some of our franchises under the Hallmark umbrella, like Dayspring. We show our movies there on Hallmark Movies and Mysteries because it's a more of an, and Dayspring's a Christian brand. It's about faith. And it's and that's a different type of journey, right, than what you see in a typical Hallmark Channel movie. And beloved franchise Mahogany is there. That's where it lies as well. And then Hallmark dramas, mostly, I'm going to call it, you know, nostalgic family dramas. And again, they have a lot of the same elements. Mostly, I would say it is about everything's going to turn out in the end. You look at most of those movies. So that's how I would describe the, that's more than three ingredients, but I'm, you know, there are different networks. I think at the core, you can see the commonalities, but also the differences.
That's awesome. I my mom loves the channel, loves it. Like if she's not watching sports, Westerns, it's Hallmark.
Oh, like, tell her thank you.
Well, stop. So there you go. Another ATL reference. All right. So a good segue into what you were just saying is that, I mean, like Crown Media does have, like I said, they have a lot of stuff under their umbrella, and you kind of hit on some of the diversity inclusion brands underneath that, like Mahogany. And I wanted to know from your opinion, like, you know, now that we're discussing things about inclusion, and Hallmark already has brands for Latinos and Blacks and LGBTQ, Christian and Jewish faith. Can you explain, you know, in the current landscape, how do you feel, or let me rephrase this another way. Why, in your opinion, do you feel that diversity and inclusion stories are so important for television?
Yeah. So for me, and this goes back to being, you know, I'm so glad you're from Atlanta because you'll understand a lot of it, the dynamics that exist in this community that's a little different from others, right? So I think for me growing up in the South, I navigated a lot of different worlds, and I understood at times I was in all Black in an all Black environment, and that felt like home. But then I had to learn how to navigate environments that were all white as well. And I wanted that, didn't feel like home, but I wanted to feel at home, right, to some extent. And so to me, I think one of the reasons for diverse and inclusive stories is that as you encounter people who are different than you, instead of them being, instead of leaning into stereotypes or looking at news headlines and making assumptions about who people are, if you know someone, if you see them and you know their story, then you can become more accepting. And if not accepting, at least more informed, right? And so I always say for us, everyone wants to see their love story. The reason I talked about Julia is because I knew I wanted to aspire to be a woman like that, right? And if you see it, and so back to like growing up in sort of a phrase you hear often growing up is, if you see it, you can be it, right? I think that's literal. I take that literally. And I do think, and I have seen it happen as a person who've navigated many different environments. And even let's just talk TV, working at a news organization, working at CNN is not like working at Discovery, which is not like working at TV One, which is not like working at Hallmark, right? And so if you can understand who you are in the context of who you are within different environments, then I think that helps you get along in this world. That's why it's so important with television. It's a mass media medium, and it gives people an opportunity to step outside of their day-to-day and say, I didn't know this about this person, this personality type, or, you know, this person who lives in the South versus the West Coast. You know, you can just learn. And that's why I think it's important.
So to that, are we talking just representation on screen, or at Crown Media, at Hallmark, is that also something that is part of a change in the culture?
Yeah, I think, you know, you mentioned the parent brand. I think it's always been part of the culture. I don't know about 113 years ago when we were founded, but I will tell you, by looking at the portfolio, one of the reasons I was excited about taking this job is because I knew that they were inherently inclusive. There were LGBTQ cards, and you mentioned some of the others. I remember a friend of mine saying, my husband drives 30 miles to get a mahogany card. It meant that much to him to get that for her. And the reason, because I said, why? And she said, because it is in my voice. And so, you know, I think it's true for the company to have the, you know, the insight into different types of people and to represent them authentically in a few sentences on a card. Like, that's like really leaning into diversity in a different kind of way, right? It really is. It's not like I'm just going to change the color of a person on the front of the card. It is like, I'm going to speak to you. And so that's what I think we've been trying to do, like by, you know, when we have people, whether it is, you know, an Asian family or a Hispanic family, sometimes I call it cultural authenticity. And I'm going to talk about one of my favorite scenes in a movie we did, not this Christmas, but the Christmas before, because I just love it. It was called Christmas in My Heart. And it was about a little girl. She was biracial. Her mother was Black. She died. And so her father, her white father, is raising her. But he moves to the town where her Black grandmother lives, right? And so her grandmother is being played by Cheryl Lee Ralph, who, you know, has been part of our family. And she's, the little girl plays the violin, and she's like, I don't know how to wear my hair. And the grandmother says, well, you can wear box braids, or you can wear, you know, braids. And she says, well, but that's not professional. She's a violinist, right? And she says, you are beautiful no matter, you are not your hair. You are beautiful no matter how your hair looks. Now, if you're not in out in the Black community, if you've never been a little Black girl like me, that's just a nice little scene between a grandma and the daughter, and the granddaughter, right? But for me, that's the conversation I had with my mom, where she had to say, you're not your hair. That's the conversation I had with my daughters. It happens in every household, every Black household where there's a daughter. And that's cultural authenticity. One of my direct reports is a Latina. And she was telling me about one of our Christmas movies and totally went over my head, but it was about a Latina family, a Hispanic family. And they were talking about, you know, what they were eating, the type of food they were going to eat for the celebration. And it just, I mean, just blew her mind. She's like, oh my gosh, my family does this every year. So really, it's not just about representation. It's about cultural authenticity. And that's what we're weaving into our stories.
Okay, that's awesome. All right, I love that. I do. You made me think about some of our traditional, especially from the South. Like, tradition in the South is not just Southern tradition, it's Black Southern tradition. And so to be able to understand and to put that in the right context, I think is really amazing. So thank you so much for sharing that. Now I'm craving some, I'm craving pot liquor and cornbread right now. That's some old school. That's old school right there.
We'll talk old school because my people are from Leary, Georgia.
Gotta go down to the store. Gotta go get me something now. Anyway, continuing. But there is something else I want to talk to you about because there's just so much television, there's so much programming, there's so much content nowadays, right? There's not just so much content, there's all different ways of people access it. So when you think about how different people and different groups ingest content, you know, like how do you feel that television needs to respond to all of this new media outlets, whether it's on the internet or social media?
Yeah, I believe you got to meet people where they are, right? I mean, I've worked in industries in the past, not media, where people have tried to, okay, this is what we do. And now people are trying to get, they're getting this product a different way, but we're not going to go there because we just do it this way. You can't do that, right? Because people, and it was kind of, think back to the days of broadcast and cable, and people thought, you know, broadcast never, ever imagined cable would overtake it. And we had, when I was at Turner, there was this ad sales insight. It was media at the millennium. And by the year 2000, you know, cable would be bigger. So now you see streaming. Like, I remember the first time I dropped my kids off at college, I'm like, let's get this television. It hooks up to cable. They're like, I got my computer, right? So you just have to meet people where they are first and foremost. I think, you know, this environment is so fragmented and you know, relatively, and the business model is still being tweaked, let's say, as it relates to streaming, right? There's so much choice. And I think for me as a brand person, at the end of the day, regardless of all the different distribution methodologies or outlets you may have, it begins and ends with brand. It just does. And so what I see is you see a lot of streaming services that are, they're not like a brand. It's not about brand, content brand delivery. It's more about like, I'm now the cable operator. I'm just distributing it because this is my methodology and there's all kinds of content. But I believe for us, our advantage is that we are a strong brand. When you say Hallmark, it means something to people. It is an emotionally connected brand. So regardless of how our content is delivered, that brand will be consistent. We did a really unique deal last year with Peacock. And a lot of people, you know, come to us and said, hey, we want to license your content and put it on our streaming service. And I didn't see the value of that when we have our own streaming service. But then when Peacock came to us, their vision, which was really different, was they were almost like a virtual MVPD, meaning like a Hulu, right? They're carrying all three of our linear channels and created a hub. And so their sort of whole mantra is around fandom. They have the WWE, they have the Housewives, and they have Hallmark, you know, so they have this. And I thought that was super smart, by the way, because having worked, you know, there were people of Weather Channel who were fans, wrestling when I worked on it, fans. But we have fans like I've never seen before in my life, honestly. And so, you know, partnering with those streaming platforms so that we're delivering our content is super important. And that's what we're doing. We're going to be wherever consumers are. They're going to get our content however they want to get it. But we're going to always be brand first.
Hey, that, wow, okay. So psyched. let me ask you this question, because I have to imagine, and you know, because you've worn so many hats in your career, mm-hmm. you've touched a lot of people, and a lot of people touch you. Mm-hmm. And I have two questions for you. The first question is more for the professional thing, which is, when you're talking to people who are coming into this industry, mm-hmm. what are some of the pieces of advice that you typically give them?
Yeah, I would say, you know, the first thing I say is really know who you are and know who you're not, right? Because sometimes when you get in environments and you're trying to, you know, shape shift so to fit the environment, you're going to have to make decisions in your career, or you're going to have conversations in your career that are really based on who you are and who you're not. And the reason I say who you're not is because sometimes people will try to stereotype you or put you in a box. You know, I was the engineer or I was the strategist, but you know what? I went to high school performing arts. I'm also creative. You know, I can be. So I know who you are and know who you're not. Know your strengths and be honest about it, but also know what you're, you know, not so good at, and find something where you can really better leverage what you do well versus, you know, be found out for what you can't, right? And I've seen that when people struggle in their careers, and it's like, what are you really good at? Go do that. Be in that department, right? Do that. And then if you want to expand like I did, then you get a chance to do that. The other advice I certainly give for, you know, for Black people coming in the business is that, you know, you have to find someone who can mentor you. And usually, I mean, for me, I mean, not usually, today it's very different, but for me, they didn't look like me, right? Because there weren't that many people. But I definitely found a lot of women who mentored me. Then through the years, I found a lot of men who did as well. So, you know, find somebody who cares about your career almost as much as you do, and they are your truth tellers. And then the last thing I say, because this is important, is choose your bosses wisely. The reason I say that is, you know, before I got into this business, I had a horrible boss, and I will never forget having a knot in my stomach before I went to work every day. And I just decided, you know, this is Southern girl in me. I was like, you're not treating me like that. And I remember saying to him, unless you can treat me with respect, walking through into my office, then come back when you can. And it took every fiber of my being, but I have since then worked for amazing people. You know, just like me, they're perfectly imperfect, but people who at least were, who cared about my career, who cared about what was important to me, who gave me opportunities, and I failed at times, but they understood that that happens, right? They let me fail. They gave me room to fail, which a lot of people don't get in this business. They just don't. And so, you know, find that right boss who will do all those things for you, because it makes all the difference. It just does. And I have tried throughout my career to be that boss. I am, again, perfectly imperfect, but I also try to hire people that I think do the same with the people that work for them.
I have never heard that phrase, but I love it more than anything. I'm just like, I have to write this down and put it on the sticky so it's always near me, because that makes so much sense. That makes so much sense. Okay, that sage advice. So the second part of this question is that, and you know, I really want to talk about baseball, but we're not going to talk about baseball. But your father and your uncle are very near and dear to me and the people in Atlanta as members of the Braves franchise, Bill Lucas and Hank Aaron. So I have to imagine growing up in a baseball family that there, not only there was great conversations, but as you were going through your life and your career, they had to have given you a lot of good advice. So I'm curious, what advice did they give you that you use, that they gave you that you still use today?
Yeah, I would say, you know, the advice I got from my father and the walk I watched him walk was care about the people that you work with. Care about the team. And the reason I say that is because what I remember about him is I remember when somebody's career was over and you have to give that bad advice, you know, he'd invite them to our house and he'd sit down. I could see him sitting on the sofa now with this, with the player, and he'd give them hope about what's going to happen next for them. You know, the other thing I learned about my father is that, like, he cared about the community. It wasn't just about, like, you know, the sport. He cared about the community. And so Terry McGuirk, who's the chairman of the Braves, he knew my father, and he tells me stories about my dad at work all the time. He's like a father figure to me. And he told me a story about how my dad would disappear at lunch. And, you know, when everybody else is kind of gathering, but he would be walking through Summerhill, and that he would talk to people, because my dad grew up in the projects, Durkeyville and Jacksonville, right? So he is walking through this, you know, it was a predominantly black neighborhood. It was a black neighborhood. And he'd walk through the neighborhood. If somebody needed a bus ticket, I'm gonna get you a bus ticket. If somebody needed a job, he made sure that a certain percent of people, whenever they were hiring at the stadium, that they also hire people from the community, black people from the community. So it was about community care in action. And so for me as a person, you know, I've got my job and I care about the people that work for me. I care about the people that I work for. But I also care about the community. Never forget that. I mean, I've never forgotten it. I probably do way too much for the community, but I care about the community. You know, from my uncle, who I knew much longer in my life, right? My dad died at 42. I was 18. And so I didn't have nearly enough time with him. But from my uncle, I do remember, we used to live around the corner from him when he was chasing his dream. And I was very close to my cousins. I mean, I spent a lot of time in his house. And so I remember when the police cars showed up, I remember when my cousin had to come home from Fisk because her life was being threatened. So as he was chasing the home run record, I saw how things went from this happy, safe, secure home to a place that felt scary. You know, I felt the tension in the house change. And what I learned from him then, and then, you know, many, many years later, just as he was, you know, an older man, I learned, you know, how to handle difficult situations with grace and calm and forgiveness. Never did I see him get angry. Never. We were angry. Never did I see him get angry. Now, you saw the persona of him sort of on the field, but I saw him at home. And I'm just telling you, it was like, and what it taught me was there are going to be people that come at you, right? For many different reasons in your life. And what you have to remember is you remember who you are and whose you are, right? That's Southern. But watching him know who he was and not give in to the behaviors that people would want, like, that was helpful. I will tell you, when I was at the Weather Channel, I got my first piece of hate mail. When I became the GM of the Weather Channel, somebody mentioned my father. They wrote me a letter. It was pretty threatening. They mentioned my dad. They mentioned my uncle. Now, a whole lot of people didn't know about my dad, but they mentioned both. And I was like, I know how to handle this. I've seen this before. I've seen it before, right? So learning that lesson about resilience and with calmness and care and forgiveness is a lesson I think everybody should know and know how to walk in that way, because it walked through life that way, because it has helped me throughout my life. It just has.
Wow. I mean, first of all, that is so much to unpack right now. Jeez. But I just, like, thank you so much for sharing that. I we all knew some of the challenges that, you know, Hank faced chasing his home run dream. But when you hear from a personal perspective how the family was impacted, that's something you don't always hear. You hear a little bits and pieces, you don't hear anything a lot about that. And I can only imagine how that fortified you in a certain way, because you know, and thank you for sharing what happened to you at the Weather Channel. I think for people of color, you know, people don't realize how often that happens. When I used to do film criticism at Creative Opening here in Atlanta, one of the first things, I thought I was doing a good job, and the next thing I know, I'm getting voicemail, like these long rants about me and how hateful it was. And I had to kind of think about it, and I was a little shaken up. But then you realize that you've been preparing yourself for being around that tree for a long time, you right. know, and you know that tree is always there. And Nina Simone talks about it, so I'm not going to say the name of the tree, but
that's right. And the thing is, it can't. I've seen it break people, though, right? I mean, we're all, and listen, you know, to broaden it, like, we all have trials and tribulations in life, right? Whatever they are. And I think I've seen it break people. And, you know, what a song. I mean, I love Beyonce, but I love you. You know, you can't break my soul, right? And that to me is like, that's kind of the headline. And I think regardless of whatever you're facing, you have to just know who you are. And you have to know, like I said, you got to know whose you are. And that, knowing that and hearing that as a kid growing up, that's important. Nothing better than that, right? That's why I love growing up.
there you go. I love this. So, you know, now that we've had this, now I know who you are, and you are amazing. And I am so grateful to have this time with you to not just learn about what you're doing at Crown Media and Hallmark, but to get to talk to another ATLian and to know that they're doing good and positive things in the community that I love so much. So, I mean, thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Ed. It was so wonderful to meet you. Thank you.
That was fellow ATLian Wanya Lucas, president and CEO of Hallmark Media, our 2023 AFCA TV Vanguard Award recipient. Now, if you'd like to know more about our honorees, please visit the AFCA website. Now, in the interview, I did reference that tree, and I also mentioned Nina Simone, but I'd be remiss if I didn't acknowledge Strange Fruit was written by Abel Meeropol and performed by the late, great Billie Holiday. And that's our show. Thanks again to Wanya Lucas and her amazing team for making this interview happen. Now, AFCA has a ton of programming in the works, and you can stay up to date on our latest videos, events, panels, screenings, and more by following our organization on social media. You can find AFCA on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And oh yeah, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel. So until next time, keep your head up.